Hold on. Who is going to say the wish to Dean Markle? Okay. I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's the regular board meeting of the Kanyatta ISD Board of Trustees. It is August the 28th, 2012, and it is 6:06 p.m. Tony, could you please call roll?
Mrs. Casas?
Here.
Mr. Cornejo?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Strauss?
Here. And that would bring us to the Pledge of Allegiance and the Texas Pledge of Allegiance. And we have a very distinguished guest tonight. Dee, would you like to do that for us? Thank you very much.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you very much. And Ms. Quintana, would you be so kind as to read the mission statement for us?
Canopio ISD will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
Thank you very much. Dr. Murphy, that would bring us to your comments.
Thank you, President Searles, board members, audience members. Three quick items. Thank you, everyone who came to convocation last Monday. We had a full house, Olympic theme. Our keynote speakers were our principals this year, all nine. Principals gave a short speech on something to do with the Olympics and how it related to this school year, and then I closed with my own comments. We had a torch run in, and the schools all marched in under a banner, just like the Olympics opening ceremonies, and it was a fantastic event. It was also covered by the media in a very positive way. Probably had four stations, TV stations there, so it was very positive. We then went through a week of staff development. Teachers worked at their campuses, worked all over the place. We even used Grace Gardens a little bit in some of their conference room areas at a very reduced price. Grace Gardens gave us a very good deal because it was just teacher training, and we appreciate that. We did do job alike again this year, and I know that there were some concerns about that, but we did it completely different this year in that we brought in Region 19. And Region 19 led many of the activities. And so I think it went smoothly and very well. I personally visited several of them, and they seemed to be going great. Of course, yesterday, first day of school, we really have had no problems. It's been smooth. I think my office has received maybe one call in the last 2 days. The transportation has gone smoothly. Our enrollment is way up. Last year at this time, we were at just like 5,900 students, and right now we're at 6,100, so 200 student gain. Doesn't sound like a lot, but what is that, 2-3% increase. We have gains at Kanyatta Elementary, they're way up. JDE, their enrollment is up. GES, their enrollment is up. Both middle schools have increased enrollment. Our high school is sitting at 1,600 students. That's up from 1,475. That's an extra 125 students at CHS. So we are growing, and some schools more than others, but certainly at the secondary schools, with both middle schools and our high schools, we've increased enrollment this year. I personally have visited all nine campuses already. I did four yesterday and five today. I feel like I've done an Olympic event myself. Visiting and not only visiting, but walking through multiple classrooms at every school. Our overcrowding issues are not that great. We have a few areas where we have some classes sitting at 26, 28, but we're even working to get those down. So very smooth opening, and I want to especially thank the custodial staff, the maintenance staff, the transportation staff, everybody who stepped up in the last week to get the buildings clean and sparkling. And we only even have just a few areas of maintenance where we're concerned about left. But the buildings are gorgeous. The interiors of all nine buildings are just outstanding. Our custodial staff did a great job. So we're rolling, and things are going well. Thank you very much, President.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. And I had the good fortune of driving past Jose Damian Elementary on the way here. It's never looked more beautiful. So I congratulations to the groundskeepers. I mean, it looked absolutely lovely. Tony?
Item 3, legislative update, Representative Marco.
And President, if I might.
Yes, sir.
We welcome Representative DeMarco from the Texas House. He is our representative. Dee, what's your official number?
78.
And he is here to provide an update on the blue sheet of paper that everyone has or the questions that were given to him. No, please have a seat, Dee.
Okay.
And Dee's going to spend 20, 30 minutes talking about some of these things and a little question and answer throughout. You'll see in the questions we get to many of the issues that a lot of board members have brought up. But Representative Marco, thank you so much for coming and turn time over to you.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy and President Searles. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I really enjoy representing Kenyatta and District 78 along with the rest of our delegation. And we have never handled ourselves in the House by district. We represent all of El Paso and work together that way. And I think it's starting to show with the rest of our colleagues at the House floor. You ask a number of questions. Just by way of background, I am on appropriations, so I do deal with the budgets and the allocation of funds. And I'll, as I recall last year when we were going through all of our machinations on school financing, I did my darndest to make sure that Dr. Murphy was texting Dr. Murphy and the heads of both Anthony and EPISD at the same time to let them know what was going on and to give me as much feedback as you all could, given the heat of battle in Austin at the time. As you will recall, some of those texts were quite late at night. But let me give you an update. I just got back from Austin Sunday evening, and we had an appropriations hearing on Friday, so I do have some fairly recent numbers. But people announced, and I think you got my email early, I found out Saturday from the governor's office that Michael Williams would be named head of TEA. Michael is an old friend of mine, known him for many years, and I think that's a step up. I'm very pleased to have Michael there, and at the very least, I'm pleased that we can have a voice that I did not feel like we had when I would deal with Mr. Scott. We weren't always on the same wavelength. Regarding the House Public Ed chairmanship, it will probably go, and this is purely supposition, but I think it's better than 50-50, to Jimmy Don Acock. Jimmy Don represents Killeen, and he's on appropriations with me. He's a retired veterinarian, and he handles Article 3 on the budget on appropriations, which is education. So he's well versed in it. Rob Eisler, who was chairman of public education, did not win his primary. So he is not returning at all. So it makes sense. Jimmy Don does a good job, and I spoke to him Sunday, and he said he thought he was going to have to give up his appropriations chairmanship. He's the subcommittee chair of public ed to take on this. Nothing's official. Nothing can be official until after the election and the speaker makes those decisions. But if I'm a betting person, then I would say that's probably a good choice. On the Senate, rumors abound. I don't know. The Senate, from a House member standpoint, the Senate typically is a challenge for us to deal with. But there are rumors that Dan Patrick may be, in which case there are going to be lots of challenges for public ed, and some of us will have to make sure we advocate appropriately. Let me move on to question number 2. Y'all, please interrupt me if there's something else I'm not covering. I wonder about the revenue and the budget and how the miscalculation, these are things we just talked about. When we walked in to appropriations a year ago, the first thing we had to do was plug a $4.2 billion hole. And there were three reasons that Susan Combs, our comptroller, gave us for this $4.2 billion shortfall from her 2009 projections. First was that we had about $3 billion less in sales tax revenues coming into the state than were projected. Sales tax revenues are 50% of our budget, of our revenue stream. Texas is very diverse and has diversified significantly since the mid-80s. So 50% of our revenues are sales taxes. Somebody said you need to go out and spend. Second thing was that property values had gone down for the first time in 17 years statewide. And the last thing that she said drove this was the fact that the Franchise Margin Tax was projected to bring $6 billion in. That's the business tax that my firm pays and many others. But it only brought in four, and it's not exceeded four. Some people call that, well, there's a structural deficit there, et cetera. I have debates back and forth. Most people, or a lot of the members of the appropriations are saying it's really not so much a structural deficit as it is. In 2007, we had a different economy. If that's the baseline, then that's where we are. But also remember, part of the problem that we had to deal with in the last budget related to education funding is the fact that in 2009, in the 81st legislative session, we had $14 billion of federal stimulus dollars given to the state that were used in our budget. It just so happens that the budget finalized for 12-13 is exactly $14 billion less than it was in 10-11. Of federal R dollars. But of those $14 billion, at the time, the makeup of the House was 76 Republicans and 74 Democrats. It's a little different. I went in to the House this past time. There were 101 of us as Republicans and 49 Democrats. It's now, frankly, 102-48. J.M. Lozano from Kingsville became a Republican. But the pundits for the future say it'll probably be 90 or 95 next year, whether I'm there or not. And there is what it looks like. So we're going to have that. But at the time of the 81st session, they could not, the Republican majority, which was so slim, wanted to take federal stimulus dollars and apply those only for one-time capital expenditures. So there were no recurring costs because they knew the money wasn't going to be there the next time. Well, they couldn't agree on it, and the bottom line was, based on the democratic process, $3.3 billion of federal stimulus dollars went to the 2009-10-2011 biennium budget for education. So that immediately went away, in addition to the declines in estimated revenue. So we had a multiple of things we had to deal with. Now, since that time, we've had great increases in sales taxes. We've had property values have gone up. I was in Midland 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you've been to Midland, Odessa. You can't get a hotel room. Restaurants are closing because they can't find help. And they're setting up man camps outside, I think, because they don't have the housing. It's a phenomenal difference. Zero unemployment. So, you know, you got this pockets with oil and gas that's driving up a lot of things. That's generally what we came up with. The budget is general revenue and federal matching funds. Together that becomes all funds. That's what we spend. And the matching funds are simply Medicaid and education, federal matching dollars there. The rest of it is general revenue. 95% of our general revenue budget in the state of Texas, 95%. Spent on education, Medicaid, and our civil correctional justice system. That's where it all goes. So we have approximately 5% for all the other agencies. Joe Pickett and I were speaking today at lunch with CPAs. We have 5% for all the rest of them, but the majority. So when we're making decisions, we're balancing Medicaid, education. Those are the two largest drivers of our budget. So that's where we were. Will the legislature do anything about the court decision on school finance?
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Just real quick on the issue with, I guess, looking, is it a structural deficit or is it the economy? And then what are your projections for this coming legislative session?
I think we'll do better this regular session. I heard both. The fact that the margins tax continues to come in about $2 billion less than expected creates some concern for a lot of us. However, is that as a part of the function of the economy, or is that a function of the system and the way the tax is collected or regulated? I'm not sure yet. But we are looking at approximately $5 billion more in general revenue dollars. I think Comptroller Combs underestimated in 2011 the way she possibly overestimated in 2009. So we got a large fudge factor going on. We've also increased the rainy day fund. The rainy day fund ended in August of last year, August 31st, 2011, ended with $5 billion. And in November of last year, we added $1.1 billion. And the projection for August of 2013 is that it will be somewhere between $7.3 and $8.1 billion. Now, what I didn't tell you in the budget, which slipped me, which is critical, is that this budget has two significant deferrals and underfundings totaling $6.3 billion. We have deferred $2.3 billion owed to the foundation school program, schools, public schools. We're making our budget as 23 payments of $2.3 billion, not the 24th. The 24th is going to be made instead of August of 2013, September. From your standpoint, your cash flow is going to be only a few days, but that's the way that thing is structured in our budget, was to play an accounting, to deal with the accounting issues of the projected revenues as given to us by Susan Combs, Comptroller. The other area that scares me to death is that we underfunded, we deferred in your case, but we underfunded Medicaid by about $4 billion, Medicaid caseload. That's the largest amount we deal with. State, the largest expenditure, and we underfunded that. In fact, this Medicaid is expected to run out of funds in May of next year. It'll get paid, everything will get paid, but that's why we have that rainy day fund available if worse comes to worse. I had great concerns over the deferral of the $2.3 billion for the foundation school program. I thought at the time we should take it out of the rainy day fund, but everybody said no, wait and see. Now, wait and see is we are approximately $5 billion ahead of the game than we expected before, so we may not even need to do that. But those are when we come back, as Representative Pickett and I were talking about today, when we come back in session next year, assuming I'm there, the first thing we're going to deal with is the shortfall that we got funded. So we'll have to do that immediately by statute. Did that answer your question?
I guess my concern is when you're looking at the proposed budget that y'all will be looking for the next fiscal years, and looking at whether it's the revenues or the structural deficit or both, it's just a major concern when it comes to school funding, and then looking at whether the permanent school fund is going to have to come in again and put in money to actually look
at
the
short fund balance.
No, not the fund balance. I'm talking about the overall
foundation school program.
Yeah, I'm talking about the overall. I guess our future. You know, we stayed at pretty much current levels, and then in the future, are we going to look at funding? You know, this coming fiscal year. I mean, this past fiscal year to actually catch up to the student growth is amazing.
Well, the student we funded for 170,000 new students over 2 years. Based on the data I saw Friday, it's about 85,000 a year. So we actually funded approximately what the needs are in our statewide school districts for enrollment, which I thought, frankly, quite candidly, we were underestimating the new student population. But it appears that we're kind of on target in the numbers I've seen. So I don't think we're that far out of whack. The big thing was last time, I mean, we're mandated by our Constitution to have a balanced budget, and that balanced budget is certified by the comptroller. Some of us, you know, we only meet 140 days every 2 years. Some of us would like to continue that. I think it's a blessing to the Texas residents. We only meet 140 days every 2 years. But on these budget cycles, to be able to truly say, given the machinations and the problems that we have worldwide, et cetera, and how everything seems to impact, Pickett has thrown out, and I'm inclined to agree with him, that maybe we ought to be able to come back in a brief session, less than 30 days or so, just to look at the budgets and the revenues to date that have been received to see what tools we must be done. And I think that's going to be open for discussion. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it'll be, it's a valid discussion to have. But that's the problem we have. We have to do it 2 years in advance. Let me get to the next one because I think it may come back and address where are we going to be. The question about what's going to happen on school finance. The Supreme Court is dealing with two issues, simply stated, adequacy and efficiency. Are we adequately funding as required by Constitution? And are you efficient in the students? It's never been done before with both sides. It's always simply been on the adequacy side, not on the efficiency side. The Supreme Court actually asked the last time when they gave or stated in their position the last time, you didn't ask us about efficiency, but we would have addressed that. This is one time this case is going to go on both. The caucus, when I was with the House caucus, the Republican caucus this weekend, stated that they would not that we would probably not take up school finance until after the Supreme Court rules, which I understand, I'm not sure when it's going to be. I think the position is if we act upon something before it has to be changed and all these other things, we're better off just waiting to see what will happen. Apparently in the past they've tried that, I don't know. But I think that's probably what's going to happen, in which case we're going to need to make sure everybody knows what's needed here, what's needed to go past, what's needed to grant, and be able to properly articulate that. So that's my job. On the EDA, the existing debt allotment, and IFA on the instructional facilities allotment, as you know, the EDA provides the tax rate equalization for local debt service taxes for general obligation bonds, but not lease purchase agreements. And the IFA is the same, but it includes lease purchase agreement. The IFA did not have an allocation in this biennium, but we're maintaining current obligations. We had some funds coming, they're going to continue. Automatic EDA roll forward will occur. It's already part of state law and TEA rules. That's the best I can tell you now. We made lots of, you know, as I said earlier, we made lots of tough choices given the limits we were given on dollars. I'm still concerned on the higher ed dollars for the Texas grants. We're not making those. We kept that the same. To me, that's a critical issue. Other things that affected UTEP and Tech. But it's just kind of bouncing out and doing the best we can with what we've got and the money that's been allocated to us at the time. I will tell you, as an aside, nobody was happy with the budget. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Nobody was happy. We did the best we could with what we were given. We didn't walk out of there. I mean, I know that there are folks out there saying, well, we cut $14 billion. The issue was, it wasn't so much we were cutting $14 billion, as we were trying to make it balanced, given the fact that the fragile nature of the economy both in Texas and nationally, was such that we couldn't raise taxes. There was no appetite for raising taxes, and I was in agreement with that. So we did the best we could with what the revenues were at the time we were given. Whether we liked it or not, it was kind of just, we did the best we could.
Through the chair,
Representative Margo, we would just like to state that we would be in favor of IFA coming back.
Absolutely.
And anything you could do to help in that area, that would greatly affect our growing district.
One of the things we talked about today, Marissa Marquez and Naomi wasn't there, but Marissa and Joe and I talked about today, is we will meet between now and year end, hope I'll get part of that after the election, and get together and figure out what we need to do. And I hope to remain on appropriations. I think I can or will. And we will be able to bring this forth on that. I also want to try to get on higher ed instead of land and resources. Because I think, to me, as I look at the drivers for El Paso, it's Fort Bliss, it's Tech and UTEP, and it's manufacturing. That's the Maquilas. And I think our education system is what drives that, including the public ed, and the community college and all of it. So those are big drivers for our future. I mean, we need that from an educated workforce in order to attract capital. The biggest problem we have in this community, all of El Paso, is the fact that the majority of our property tax base is residential. No other community of our size in the state of Texas has a majority of their property values residential. They're commercial. We're about 64% residential, and that continues to hinder, slow down, and affect us. We've got to do things to attract capital investments and the things we're trying to do. If you ask about is there any chance for a statewide property tax idea, I doubt it. The Constitution doesn't allow it. Well, I don't think it's going to happen. When they made Tommy Williams, they announced Senator Tommy Williams from Houston yesterday as chairman of Senate Finance. That's a positive move. I like Senator Williams. They talked about Duncan from Lubbock being there. We didn't always see eye to eye on El Paso. I'll just be candid with you. And I think that it'll be easier to work together between the House and the Senate with Tommy Williams as senator running, replacing Ogden as Senate Finance. I feel much better about that. There is some movement out there about doing away with property taxes completely. There are a couple of studies out there in think tanks, and they say, well, what we want you to do is raise the sales taxes to a certain level and put it on all services. But when you list the services that would receive sales taxes and the amount that would be, simply stated, ain't no way. Ain't gonna happen. We're probably gonna have to do something, but there's no way that's gonna happen. Do away with the property taxes, and I can assure you, given what I was looking at in those numbers as a percentage. The biggest frustration I have is the majority of the legislature in the House has never been to El Paso. You know, we go down and visit in Austin, we send groups down, but the vast majority of them have never been here. And so what I've been trying to do along with Marissa and Naomi and Joe Pickett and all is bring them out here and let them see what we're doing, what it's going on. You know, they passed through, they've been here, but they don't know. I brought out some people from Natural Resources to look at our water, look at the desal plant. We have the best water plant of any of the 18 districts in Texas. They really ought to just mirror ours. Those are the kind of things we're trying to do and bring them out. What I do is explain to them what our tax base looks like from a property standpoint. And I also say, if you guys raise sales taxes, you got to understand where we're located drives commerce into Mexico and New Mexico. There's got to be a balance. You cannot do this in an arbitrary way. So, trying. On these instructional materials, on the IMA, one of the concerns is the districts have spent less during this biennium because the new material requirements for STEM, math, science, technology do not take effect until November of 2013. The materials for those subjects are more expensive to fund. One of my objectives is to educate the public and fellow legislators to not see that lowering spending during this biennium as ISDs needing less money for their materials. distortion. Because we haven't spent it, I think we don't need it, we'll take it away. No, we don't want to do that. IMA funding is carried forward in each district's IMA account for the next biennium. You're not going to lose it. I think that was your concern. Are you going to lose it if you don't use it? And I understand I have. No, will not. Star exam, 15% rule. Personally, I'm against the 15% rule. I'm for end of course exams, but I'm personally against that. Two reasons. My youngest son. He probably had the lowest SAT score of any freshman ever entering Vanderbilt University. I don't even know how he got in. And he went to Coronado, graduated top 10, had good grades. He couldn't take a test. He couldn't just take a test. He graduates magna cum laude in 2004. I graduate, thank you, Lord. But he graduates magna cum laude. And so I have a problem. I have one of my partners has a son just graduated from Baylor, Phi Beta Kappa. He couldn't take the LSAT to save his life. He had a horrible thing. And we had to leave to get him in the tech. He'll do fine. There's just a distortion there on these encapsulated tests. I have a problem with it. I also think there's overtesting. And all I hear from teachers is, you know, let me teach, quit forcing me into all this. There's got to be an accountability measurement. And there's got to be, and I'm in favor of end of course, but I'm not in favor of the time you all are having to spend or your teachers are having to spend with all of this test prep and time. Now, you all may be totally against that from my standpoint. That's where I'm coming from. So we can clear our answers ahead of time, so I'm not sure what you think. But that's just the way I'm looking at it. I think there ought to be a way to measure it. My preferences would be to give the schools the amount of money they need, let them use it any way they want, and measure outcomes. More towards what I think most of you would want related to site-based management principles, schools being able to determine what's best for their students and how to do it. That's just the way I look at it. I think there are too many restrictions. And I notice you all have as much resources as you need in order to get it out.
Chair, to even exacerbate the problem even further, only 45% of the freshmen pass the English EOC, and the statewide. And so that 55% is going to retest. So on top of all the other exams that the state will be administering, they're also going to be administering these re-exams to the students who failed, which across the state was over 50%. So if the testing calendar was 20 days of testing, it's now 21-22. They're adding days because they didn't even pass. And we're very concerned about the instructional calendar being ridiculously impacted by this over-testing.
Well, I'm told there's 40 days or so that you have to do that. 40 or 45, right?
That at some point, a grade level is affected.
I just think that's wrong.
So is the legislature feeling the same way, and will that be addressed this session?
I tell you, the majority of us were not in favor of that STAR test, the way it was going to be counted as 15%. That was easy. I don't know of any legislator who didn't sign on the letter restricting TEA to quit doing it, put it on hold.
Give it to 1 year.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of understanding there. I thought we tried to do too much too soon. Some of the things I thought we did last time were beneficial to you. You couldn't furlough without a termination process. Now you can. We did away with the last in, first out issues so that you could pick and choose if you had to do something. I think those were good. It gives you the power to do it. That's been my point. So you don't have to do a termination process. You can do a furlough and go from there. If you have an exigency, whatever, I can't ever say it, financial. Let me cover two things, and then I'm through. I'm getting lots of emails from teachers, former teachers, regarding TRS and on the employment, the state employment side, ERs. Are we doing away with it? I have one email I received from a teacher who says, it's my understanding that the legislature fully intends to change the TRS defined pension plan so that we would not get our annuity for life, but only the actual dollars we put in. That would make it impossible for most of us to ever retire. We have not been allowed to contribute to Social Security either, so it appears that if they get their way, those of us who are counting on that pension are out of luck. I got another one similar to that. That's not true. Let me just tell you so you can tell your teachers what's going on. Here's where the confusion is. There was a bill filed last time, House Bill 2506 by Warren Chisholm. That bill would have required TRS and ERF to move from a defined benefit program to a defined contribution plan, which is prevalent out there. That's like your 401ks. And it required TRS and ERS members to switch, but it never made it out of committee. It never got voted on. It just died quickly. So I think there's somebody out there thinking that that's still out there. Also part of the confusion may be in House Bill 1, which was the big budget, there was a rider that instructed TRS and ERS to report on the actuarial and fiscal impacts of potential changes to pension plans as of August 31st, 2011. On the retirement eligibility, final average salary, benefit multipliers, creation of a hybrid plan, including defined benefit, defined contribution, which we call cash balance plans or hybrids, and report to the LBB by 9/1 of this year, so in a few days. That's it. It was simply a study. You need to tell your teachers that nothing has been done related to TRS in changing the benefit formulas or the allocations. The other area I get is retired teachers who have not had a cost of living adjustment, COLA. It's the biggest thing I get, lots of things on there. I co-authored a bill last time that didn't make it out of the House. It was at 3542, which allowed an automatic adjustment if actuarially sound. If the TRS plan is actuarially sound, it allowed an automatic adjustment, as long as the assets were above a certain threshold and it was considered actuarially sound, to be able to do a COLA without having to come back to the legislature to ask permission to do that. It passed the House and then got killed in the Senate. And then we put it on Senate Bill 1. Again, Senate Bill 1 was the bill. Senate Bill 1 and 2 were the budget bills that we passed in the special session last year in the month of June. It passed the House, Senate Bill 1, and the Senate pulled it in conference. When the bill comes out of conference, you have a conference committee. You can't agree, the House can't agree, and the Senate can't agree. You can't amend it. When it comes out of conference, it's an up or down. So Senate Bill 1 came out without our bill or our amendment attached, which would have allowed that to. I thought it was safe. It said you've got to be actuarially sound, got to be above a certain asset level, and then you can automatically do one. And so it failed. In Senate Bill 2, they jerked UTEP from the Competitive Knowledge Fund. That was my amendment, was helping to get UTEP to Tier 1. I voted against Senate Bill 2 just for spite. I mean, the majorities were there. But that was, I just was really irritated that they did that. They put it on and passed the House and couldn't get the Senate to do it. Let's say, if I've learned anything in my first term is that I can pass a bill by 100 votes in the House, but if I don't manage the Senate, I'm dead meat. And so we've got to do that. And unfortunately, at the time, Mr. Rodriguez didn't have the power to be able to do anything more, and we had to look for other avenues. So that's it. What feedback do you have for me?
Thank you.
was very comprehensive and very good. It's excellent answers to all the questions that we've had, and I think that all of us understand that a lot of these questions can't be answered at this juncture. Mr. Rodriguez, did you have something specific?
Just more of a comment. Thank you for coming out and giving us an update. One of the things when it comes to school finance, I know TASB under their legislative agenda is actually looking at a certain model that you might want to look at. I know they weren't, it's part of the advocacy, but I believe they might be looking at it for the future because just the way economically we are currently, and so it might be something that you might want to look at.
TASB comes by my office. We usually get it. I have a lot of new friends. And they do come by and we talk about it. The biggest thing I learned last time, sometimes people say, well, this is an agenda item for us, and it's kind of an anonymous way. And this comes up, but why not? Well, I was reminded, Pickett said today, we look at about 10,000 bills. We'll take a minimum of 1,800 votes on the floor. That doesn't count the several thousand that are automatic that just pass on the calendar committee because there's no... that they're on the consent calendar. So what I encourage people to do is if you see something coming up, when it gets close in the bill, let me know. The fact that I knew about it in the big picture at the beginning of the session, we do our best to keep on, but I try to read all the bills that I can read and study all, at least the summaries at a bare minimum. I mean, it's tough. We used to go to the house, I got notebooks about this big, trying to get through it. Now I understand next year they're going to give us iPads, so we'll be technically proficient and we can do that. But that's the biggest thing. I think from your standpoint, if I'm in your shoes, I think I'd want to know, do they understand? Are they listening? And do we have a rule? And I would say that goes for all of us in the House representing El Paso. That is the case. None of us are blind to the needs of El Paso. As I tell people, I was in El Paso before I was ever a Republican. So, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is. And it has been helpful in our delegation for me to kind of run defense. And I can give them the insight as to what's going on. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's an honor to serve and represent you all in the House. And if there's anything I've left out or want to talk to me about anything, please don't hesitate to call me or my office.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the open door policy and the representation. And please, one thing if you could go away with, I echo Dr. Murphy, we need that instructional facilities allotment to be pumped back up. So if there's one thing you could walk away with knowing we really would appreciate is push that to the forefront.
I try to keep him informed of exactly what was going on the House floor. But we probably need to make sure I know what you need in the specifics so that if we have to tweak something somewhere.
Thank you. I'm sure Dr. Murphy will update you on specifics on that.
Right, and the thing I'm most concerned about, which you just said, was this waiting for the Supreme Court. You might get into a perfect storm where they haven't released anything and you're getting toward the end of your session. That could be quite dramatic.
Well, Pickett said today, and I'm inclined to agree with him, when we were talking to the CPA, he said, we'll probably have several special sessions. That doesn't really excite me, but that may be what happens. Just to get this thing done, but if we do it correctly, I'd rather spend the time to do it correctly one time and continue to do this band-aid that keeps coming back up every few years. Target revenue kills us, it kills the panhandle, and it kills us. And that formula, that is the most convoluted formula. I have a complete briefing here on school finance that I went through on Sunday for several hours. It is a mess on how it was arrived at, just to dodge our constitutional limitations on what we can do on statewide property and how we can arrive at it, and who wins and who loses. And something's got to be done. So, Thank you.
Also, we sure could use some commercial properties in our district. A lot of land, a lot of...
I agree.
Yeah, if you could keep your eye open on that one, too.
We also need to get vent and water and sewer.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, that was very nice to get our update. We've asked for that for quite some time. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Tony, that takes us to open forum.
And we don't have anyone signed up this evening.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that'll be number five then. 5A.
Item 5A is discussion and possible action to consider recommendation regarding RFQ 1202 for architectural and engineering services bids for commissioning services, soils engineering, and technical services to include a full geotechnical survey and report. Ms. Matthews, Mr. Denny.
Earlier this year, an RFQ for professional services was solicited. At this time, CISD is in need of geotechnical services, materials, testing, and commissioning. Most immediately, though, we are in need of the geotech for soils exploration that will serve as the basis for the structural design of the foundation and the structural system of the new pre-K through 8. These services, however, will also be used for the remainder of our bond projects, specifically the ones that involve building additions. So at this time, administration has shortlisted 5 firms for the board to interview and from which to select one to enter into negotiation with. Administration seeks authorization to set up these interviews and move forward this process, started previously, very previously, earlier this year. Or the second option to this is closing this RFQ and soliciting these again with the input and direction of the architect and also giving you the opportunity to review those RFQs before they work. The most urgent one right now is just the geotech for the soils for Carl Daniel Architects to get started with his structural engineer. The materials testing and the commissioning is slightly less urgent. And so, if you so chose, you could use the RFQ that already went out and that interview process simply for the soils testing of what's immediately needed, and you could resolicit the other RFQs. But it's really at your discretion at this point what you all would like to do.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
What's administration's recommendation?
I would probably go ahead and interview the ones that you have. And decide after you interview them if you want to move forward with just that part or the entire scope.
Do we need a motion on the floor to do that? Yeah?
I think so.
So I so move from administration's recommendation to go ahead and interview those RFQs that have already been submitted.
And I'll second that.
Thank you.
Oh, we got a vote.
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item B is presentation and discussion with representatives of Delgado Acosta, Spencer, Weinberger, and Bettis LLP regarding delinquent tax collection process. Ms. Bettis and Mr. Duncan.
That's great.
President Searles, board members, Dr. Murphy. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here today. My name is Carmen Bettis. I'm with the law firm of Delgado Acosta, Spencer, and Bettis. With me tonight, I have Mr. Jesse Gutierrez, who's our general manager, and Mr. Hector Delgado, who stepped out. Tonight, I'm going to give you a brief history of our law firm and what we do for you in the area of delinquent tax collection. Back in 1978, there were 2 main tax offices in El Paso. And so there were property owners that were getting two bills. And the taxing entities realized that they had to have a better way to collect taxes and also keep their tax records, because everybody had two sets of books, or three maybe. And delinquent taxes was also a problem. Our firm came into the picture in 1980. We were hired by the Aceto School District. That was our first client here in El Paso County. And in 1981, the county hired us. One of the things that the Lombardi firm realized was that technology was very important. This is back in 1982. You can imagine what kind of technology there was compared to today. But we realized that the tax records had to be put into a computer. Someone had to keep track of it. And so that was one of our fortes back then. And we actually helped when consolidation came around. And then we started collecting taxes for the county and for the school district. And we were very successful at doing that. And back in 1984, this is a newspaper article, we collected $400,000 for the county. Back then, that was a lot of money. In 1984, all the taxing entities entered into an interlocal governmental agreement for the consolidation of taxes. And so today, you have 34 taxing entities that are in an interlocal government agreement, and the city tax office collects all your taxes, it bills, sends all the legal notices that are required, and it collects all your taxes for you. And it does this at a price of 85 cents per parcel in your district. This slide is taken from the city manager's budget for 2013 that shows what other counties pay for the collection of their taxes, and per parcel fee, and El Paso is the second to the lowest in the state. So fast forward from 1980 to 2012, our partner, the Limebarger firm, is a national law firm. We're in 12 states. We have 30 offices here in Texas. We collect billions of dollars for taxing entities now in 13 states. And we provide personal services for our clients, unique services that are geared towards your needs. In 1999, we created the El Paso team. And that team consists of the Limebarger firm, Joe Spencer, Delgado, Hector Delgado, and Alex Acosta, and myself. And we're basically the local team. And we have an office of 26 employees, and we're very involved in your community. We actually have a proud Canutillo graduate on our staff, and a very proud mother of a former football player, Canutillo High School. She wanted me to tell you that. We provide a range of services for you, not just delinquent taxes. We provide taxpayer assistance when your taxpayers come to our office, or when we visit them, because we do go out and visit property owners. We make sure that we make contact with them. We also provide comprehensive litigation services. We also have a nationwide locator service, so if your property owners are absent from the area, we contact them. We have ways to find them. Really, we also help the legislation when it's necessary. So we have a team that really does a lot. And another important part is the National Bankruptcy Program that we have. We are also very strong in technology. We invest millions of dollars in technology. So basically, we provide you with the technology that really not one entity could probably afford here in El Paso County. We put it together for you, and that's part of our packet. It's our litigation software packet. And our process is really making contact with your property owners. We know that if we make contact with them and we get them to pay, that once we make contact, there is a payment result. I mean, they will pay. Sometimes, yes, we do go into litigation. But we know that litigation also takes longer. Why? Because it's now in the court's hands, and the courts are going to set deadlines, and defendants are going to have attorneys who ask for continuances. But for the most part, we have a comprehensive litigation service that actually also includes sometimes selling properties on the courthouse steps. Our letters do result in payments. We send like 3,000 notices in 1 year to your property owners who owe delinquent taxes. And a lot of times that results in getting the property owner on a payment agreement, or it results in them taking out a loan, paying their taxes. But of course, our purpose is to bring in your tax dollars. That's what you need. We also provide hardship assistance. Many times we find landlords that don't pay their property taxes, but they collect the rent from the tenants. And sometimes we're going to tax sale, and tenants will tell us the property owner came the other day, maybe pay him 3 months worth of rent after he knew we were selling the property. So in those cases, we send those people either to legal aid, which we decide to find them housing. We look to community resources to help your taxpayers. Our bankruptcy program is something that we're very proud of. It's a national bankruptcy. We go to file claims wherever the debtors do. These are just some of the highlights, but Delaware, Virginia, Pennsylvania. In this case, in this slide, MiniMix was one of your bankruptcy cases that we handled. There were taxes owed to the Chico Hills School District, and we did collect the taxes for you. Also, when we sell properties and they don't get sold, they get struck off to the county or to the city. And what we do is we have big tent sales if there's an inventory. So we don't let the property sit there. We actually act like a real estate agent. We go out there and market it. We put signs on the property. And then we hold a big tent sale if we accumulate 100 properties. And we'll have a tent sale at the jury hall downtown. And it actually is a very festive event. We have an auctioneer. We have hundreds of people that show up. And it's a bidding war. And we generate a lot of money for the taxing entities that way. But most importantly, we put your properties back on the tax roll. They start generating taxes for you, because when they're struck off, they're not generating taxes. Another thing we do is that when properties are sold and they sell for more than the taxes that are owed, there's excess proceeds. And if those excess proceeds sit in the court registry for 2 years, then we go petition that money for you, and that money gets distributed to the taxing entities. And so, that's a very important part. This is extra money that you weren't even counting on. And here are just some numbers, and I have this handout for you. Just some numbers of what we did in the last year from the rollover from July 1st through June 30th of this year. And like I said, we send out a lot of notices. Yes, we do. We file lawsuits. Again, we provide a lot of taxpayer communication, calls, visits. We visit your businesses when they owe personal property taxes. And I can safely say that your taxpayers know us out in this area. We've got some good employees that come out here and knock on doors, and we're very professional. We treat your taxpayers courteously and professionally, and we're really proud to serve you. And so I'll take any questions.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, I believe we had some questions created at the last committee meeting, and we're going to be looking at approving some of those questions so we could ask our entity, which is the city, to respond to those. But one of the questions I have, and what I would like more detailed, is more on the 1999 team that was created, and why was it created and how was it created?
In 1999, Mayor Ramirez at the time and some of the city council members really wanted a local team. They wanted, and I was working with the firm at the time. I've been with the firm almost 17 years. And they wanted a local team. They wanted strong management. And so we were able to provide that through our local partners. And it has turned out to be something that's been wonderful for the firm, and we think for our clients too.
So that's the detail you have on that?
That's
okay.
Yes.
I guess my question, when you look at the local entities that were set up to actually, I guess, compete for that contract. My concern is how much are those individuals getting paid, one, and then two, how much work are they actually doing on the casework?
I was here at the last board meeting, and I also listened to the minutes, or actually to the audio of your finance committee. And we did have our ethics counsel provide your attorney with a letter on that issue that you're talking about, and we can defer to him. Or
is there a copy of that?
Yes, by email today. I guess about later in the afternoon, he forwarded me a letter from Mr. McCormack, who I understand is affiliated with the Weinbarger firm.
Mr. Delgado, did you?
I lived the battle over this contract. I was very close to the mayor, Ramirez, who passed away. But actually, the mayor that preceded him, I think, was Larry Francis. But I may have the administration's wrong. But there was a lot of concern about a group of lawyers that were trying to put together a team. I'm a CPA, in addition to being a lawyer. And when I was approached to be part of that team that wanted to take this contract away from the Weinberger firm, I approached it like a businessman because of my CPA background. And at the time, I figured that we had to have financing and capital for probably about $1.5 million, because the way the contract works, you're only getting paid as you have contingent fees that are collected. And the contract runs for a 6-month wind down period. So if somebody was gonna step in, it has to be somebody that could afford to put up the money or borrow the money, and you're going to carry the employees. For instance, we've got a staff here, including the lawyers, of close to 30 people. But because of that, the jeopardy that the mayor felt, he asked me to approach the Weinberger firm about having some El Paso attorneys participate with them. And that's what occurred. We are a legal firm, you know, a law firm, just like Mr. Blanco's law firm. And the opinion that we provided you basically says that fee sharing is not an issue with regard to the Delgado Cuesta Spencer Weinberger Edison, just like it's not with regard to their firm. And I think your counsel will agree with that.
I guess going on in what currently is going on in El Paso, I'm looking at transparency. Legally, it may not be an issue, but my concern, when I first started looking into this information, and let me go back just to get some feedback as well. When I first started looking into some of this information, I realized that some of those questions weren't being answered by the city, and I didn't want to use my authority as an elected official for that. And so I waited till after the election to actually question some of the issues within that contract. The concern here of, I guess the other question was referring to how much work, whether it's you, Mr. Delgado, whether it's Mr. Acosta, or whether it's Mr. Spencer actually do work. This is the first time we've actually seen you at one of our meetings when it comes to the firm, and so that's one of the questions. How much work do you actually do when it comes to case?
I do a considerable amount of work, to the point that some days I office at department's offices in the the Wells Fargo group. So, and the staff knows me. But I'm not the lawyer that files the lawsuits or drafts the pleadings. And quite frankly, Polly Carmen doesn't either. She has a younger lawyer who should be doing those things. And it's just like Mr. Plunkett. You know, his partners are sharing in the income and the fees that are generated from his association and his representation in the school board. So you don't ask them to tell you which paralegal or which lawyer actually worked on the files. He has many attorneys in his law firm that don't actually work on your cases, but those fees that are being paid to that law firm are being shared by those other partners, and they're paying salaries and stuff. Those are private arrangements of a business. It's proprietary information. And just like he would, I'm sure, not want to show you his business information, his firm's business information, we don't want to show that business information either. And it's something that you know, there's privacy rights and there's traditional, you know, there's appropriate questions, and those questions are appropriate in the context of where you have fee sharing. And that's not the context in this case, because the Leinberger firm is a partner. Alex and I are partners. Joe Spencer's a partner, and Carmen is a partner in this law firm.
Yeah.
Just you know, again, you can just draw an analysis or an analogy to any law firm that's providing services to any other school board or any other governmental authority. Those law firms are not providing that information that you're seeking.
The situation here, unlike Mr. Blanco's law firm, is that there is one law firm that he represents, and his law firm does. Compared to the law firm that was set up with Delgado Acosta, you yourself have a different law firm that you are part of. Is that correct?
That's
Bickerstaff Heath, and so is Mr. Acosta. And so Mr. Spencer has his own private practice as well. And so when you look at it, it's sort of like a carnival shell game. If you know, to me, what happened in 1999 was, you know, they wanted to go local. They got these attorneys to say that they go local. As a matter of fact, one of my friends, which is a school law attorney in Dallas, just to point this out, told me about one of the firms that is actually set up the same way, which is probably legal. I'm sure it's legal because you all are attorneys and know how to set it up legally. They pretty much get about $350,000 just for that contract to say, which it's the political influence to actually get that contract, and yet they don't do work. So when it comes to if it's propriety information and you don't want to disclose that, you have that discretion. But when it comes to looking at it and analyzing it from an outside perspective, there's issues. And so when you look at nowadays and what's going on today, the transparency part is how much, if that's happening in Dallas, how much is actually happening local? And from my understanding, and what I would like to see, and we'll be requesting that information, is to see how much casework has been worked on within those other individuals. Because if there's no casework that's actually being worked on, and yet they're getting fees, that becomes, you know, what, is that transparent?
It's not. Again, if we were subject to the fee splitting rule, we would have to disclose that to you. But since we're a partnership.
So I understand, but that's what I'm saying is the transparency. So we'll ask those questions. The other question I have is looking at, can the city of El Paso collect the delinquent taxes? And then when actually it's time to go to court, that they would actually refer those cases to the tax case, to the tax work, I mean the delinquent tax work.
All that is statutory, and so it's followed by statute.
and so you have to follow the statute. The statute says that there's a fee that kicks in July 1st.
Yes, but that fee right away is by statute. Can the city collect that fee?
No.
Or the delinquent tax firm has to collect that?
That the city cannot keep that that fee, nor can any of the taxing entities. They have, as a matter of fact, they can only add the fee if they've hired a law firm to collect the delinquent taxes.
Okay. And then the other question that I have is, and I was going to ask, and I'm glad that you discussed about the, since its inception, how I guess the firm participated within the development of the City Consolidated Tax Office. Do you have any other details you might want to bring on that?
Well, at that time, like I said, the Lombard firm had a lot of data on the computer already because we were representing various clients. And so we just assisted in any way we could, which is what we still do whenever there's a joint effort that needs to be met. And so consolidation occurred probably in 1982. And so I know that at that time, a lot of our staff were going around meeting with the different entities to make sure that they understood how the delinquent tax process worked, and they joined the consolidation, not because of the delinquent taxes, but because of just the sense it made to join efforts and send out one tax bill and reduce your fees, actually, what it would. And so that's all I can answer your question.
Not quite, but the other question that I have is regarding the contract that we have, the contract with the City Consolidated Tax Office. That's our contract with them, but we also have a contract with y'all that's the meeting that you're in attendance. Can you explain that process?
Yes. Just like Mr. Gavella and Mr. Koska have their separate practice, so does the Linebarger firm. And so we do handle value study appeals, and we came to you as a Linebarger firm. And that contract is just with the Linebarger firm.
Okay. And so there is no split fees or sharing from that contract?
No.
Okay. And the other thing, just so y'all could get some of the perspective from where I'm coming from, and even before the last year, Ganadio instituted a policy that every 5 years, doesn't matter what type of firm or what type of work you do, that we're going to go out for an RFQ or an RFP to make sure that, one, we're getting the best service, and two, it would be nice, well, the best price, and it would be nice to get both. Of course, it's a qualification, request for qualification and not a proposal, so we want to make sure that we get the best services. And so we've instituted this policy within every type of work that we do. And so when I first requested when I did an open records request with the school district, the only one we had was appeals, and so that's where I started trying to get more information. So I just wanted you all to know that it's one of our policies to make sure, and I think that's the best type of policy that you have when it comes to making sure if you have a green contract, then you know nobody questions it, nobody moves forward. The other question that I have is, in the past, within the City Consolidated Tax Office, is there anybody within the city, or is this just you all representing the firm on what services provided?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is there anybody within the city, or this is, the presentation is based with the services you all are providing?
The presentation is just from the firm, and it was based on the last meeting that I attended and listening to the minutes of your finance committee meeting.
The other question that I have is, within the past, how many RFQs has the city gone out for, and you all have participated?
The last one was in the year 2000, and that contract had two extensions, and we have we're into the last 5 years of the contract, and then it will go out for an RFQ.
Okay. And the other question, actually, let me see if anybody else has any questions, and then I have a couple more, and then I'll ask for legal counsel.
You're fine to keep rolling.
Okay. The other question, I guess, you have a list of the questions, right? That we all deliberated on. What other questions might I?
Actually, I think they've covered, I've checked them all off. I think they've covered, obviously you have the one that you opened with that you still have some questions about, but others they covered with the exception of one. There was a question asked about there being an error on the tax collection work either last year or the year before.
Sure.
And there was a question about whether or not that impacted Kenny too. That was one of the
Okay, that was an internal one. But that would be for the city of El Paso.
Right. I don't know if they can answer that question.
Okay, and then let's see, I had some papers here that I was looking at. If anybody else wants to.
Are there any other comments or questions? Yes, sir.
Do you all know anything about what happened with the city with respect to their issues and the problem with the tax collection?
We just know what was in the paper, and we did address any questions that were asked of us. We provided all the information.
Actually, you can go to the city's website and look at their audit reports. And there's the audit report appears there, and it does a good job of laying out what happened.
Thank you.
I think also, Steve, the consolidated tax agreement that we sent you. Was also on the internet. But the city does a very good job in terms of publishing their audit reports where issues in terms of some problem or something that could be better. There's a better practice for it. It's laid out in their audit reports.
Mr. Rodriguez, do you have any?
I had a couple more.
Okay.
When was the last time you all, I guess since when did you all start the, since 1980 and since then all, you all had the contract with the city?
Well, no, we started with one small, well, back then it was a smaller school district, of course. So we started with one client and then with another. And then when the city and the county and all the entities realized that consolidation was important, the city at that time, back in 1984, did hire the Lime Barber partner. And then in 1999, when there was a big contract battle, and when our partnership was formed, we were given that contract. We went through an RFP process. It was very detailed, and we made presentations and with city council members, and we were given that contract in the year 2000. And in 2005, they extended it, and then in 2010, a new extension started.
And then, do you all know how much you all have gone paid from the city in the last, let's say, three calendar years?
Those should be, does it appear as a line item, or do you just take 20% of the reports to collect?
It would be in one of your reports. Well, I'm thinking it would be in one of your reports because you get information from the city tax office, so I can't tell you right now off the top of my head what fee would have come from your school district.
How much does the city consolidated tax office pay you on a yearly basis?
Well,
the contract.
The contract?
Mm-hmm.
It can be, well, and I always tell people this, we earn our fee, because if we don't collect any money for you, then we don't get paid. But it can be up to $4 million a year. A lot of that money is invested in salaries and staff, health benefits, 401k, rent, technology. We put a lot into technology.
And I guess looking at, I guess the questions, do you think there were fair and valid questions that should be asked of us when it comes to...
I think that's a decision for your school board to make. I mean, I have no comment.
No comment. And I guess my biggest thing and what we'll be doing later is see if we could get those questions answered from the taxing entity that we actually have a contract with. My biggest concern is transparency, especially with what's currently going on. And I strongly believe that when, you know, if you do have a client, whether it's legal or not, but you do have different firms and you're, the way it's set up might be legally, but it should be transparent and be provided that that firm was set up to actually get that. I guess my concern, or another, and probably the last question would be, should a contract be awarded on whether it's political influence or any of that based on
merit?
Yes, I think when you look at all the factors, when you put our firm against anyone else, it's merit and it's what we bring to the table. And we're very proud that, you know, we have this, we can provide the services that we provide.
And the sad thing is that there's no comparison when it comes to El Paso. And so that's something that needs to be asked as well. How can we compare ourselves? You know, there's pretty much a monopoly when it comes to El Paso.
I can tell you that when our firm competes in other areas of Texas, El Paso's numbers are always used in our RFPs and our RFQs because we do a good job.
But when you all compete, I mean, I had a friend in Houston and I heard there's trouble there. When you all compete at that level of, let's say, creating local entities legally, it's just a question that I would like to answer.
I have trust in the system and in the school board members and the city representatives and the elected officials, that they look at everything and give every party a fair level playing field, and that they look at the merits and that they do their homework. And so that's what we count on, and we're very fortunate that we have been able to keep clients happy through our performance.
And that's what we're doing here, is exactly what you said, and that's why I was asking if it was fair and valid questions. So
they are fair and valid, except when you start asking for how the partners of a law firm participate in a fee. No law firm provides those answers. And I think when you get a chance to study the ethics opinion that's been provided by Mr. McCormick, I think maybe that will help.
And
you know,
so it's not
fair,
not fair and valid to ask how much, you know, when an LLP, limited liability company, is set up to go after work to say that they're local, we shouldn't know what work is being done and how much those individuals are being paid.
That's correct. The code of ethics, put out by the state bar, and that code of ethics says that ethically we have no responsibility to be sharing that information. That's what that opinion says.
That's subject to interpretation.
Well,
yeah. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions this time? Thank you very much for sharing with us and for being so forthcoming with all the answers to the questions. We appreciate
it. Thank you, and we appreciate the opportunity to serve your school district.
And do you think that we could get a copy of your PowerPoint?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you all coming this evening. Thank you. Tony, that would take us to number 6, the consent agenda.
Item 6, consent agenda, and administration recommends approval of the consent agenda as presented, with the exception of items D, J, and K, which will be presented at the September 11th Policy Instruction Personnel Student Services Committee meeting.
Thank you.
Could you repeat them, Tony? D, J, and?
Yes, that would be D, J, and K.
And does anyone have anything on the consent agenda they'd like removed? Yes, ma'am.
H, N, O, and P.
H, N,
O, and P.
O, and P. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Any other ones? Hearing no other, we're going to remove item H, N, O, P, I. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do I have a motion to accept the rest of the...
Second.
Thank you very much. Motion made and seconded to accept the consent agenda as listed with the exception of H, N, O, P, I. Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes. Okay, that would take us to H.
Item H, purchase of composition notebooks.
Ms. Fosseris?
Yes, I asked that this item be pulled. I just wanted to know which student population is this going to be serving, and is it on top of the ones that already are on the supply list? Because I know several kids have to purchase six, seven of them for their class. So I just was wondering, what was it for and which population of students?
It's actually for all the core content area teachers.
Okay.
So that each student, because of we've been implementing interactive notebooks, we had the training last year, so we wanted to make sure that all students had the resources to be able to implement that.
Okay. So it's going to be district-wide?
District-wide.
All grades?
K-12.
Okay.
Can they use them? I was at all 9 campuses of the last 2 days, and all the teachers are busy setting up their notebooks. Very much used.
Any other questions? No? Tony? Oh, well, we need a motion.
Oh, motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you. Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes. That would take us to I.
And I just need some clarification, too. I noticed that this is also for district-wide use.
That's correct.
And my question is, why are they still requiring students to buy copy paper if this is for district-wide use?
I believe that was implemented when we were having the budget crisis.
I know, but we no longer have that issue.
I couldn't answer that question.
Dr. Murphy?
I hadn't even thought of that recently, if there's a feeling from the board that we should stop doing that. We haven't had any parent complaints. It does assist if everybody brings two reams of paper. Gives us a nice head start.
Uh-huh. One of them needs to, for my granddaughter, one of them has to be colored.
We don't, the district doesn't ask that.
It was on a list from my granddaughter.
From the campus.
From the teacher. Some teachers do.
You'll remember that at the end of each year we run into these problems where schools are running out of paper, and we're having to dip into our funds to buy that paper. And of course, we do that because we certainly don't want us to not run out of paper.
I remember it was an issue at one point because we had no funds. I mean, I don't know what that issue is right now.
I'm imagining that if teachers are asking for their supply list for colored paper, for example, they're probably wanting to put them into their interactive notebooks and just making things colorful, the foldables and that kind of thing that they may or may not get through their department budget.
I can't say they've expressed concern about wanting additional funding. We did allocate funds through the Title I and got clearance through auditors so that we could use it for all the different instructional programs that we've implemented, and it's all including compliance. It's just something we need to discuss with principals.
So what I'm hearing from you, Ms. Aguirre, is that we can use Title I funds to purchase paper and that...
Yes, it is, as long as it's a new initiative, which we have implemented, and that's what was the reason for their alarm initially as to why we needed more paper provided to the county.
Dr. Murphy, if it sounds like it's the will of the board, I sure would like Ms. Aguirre to further that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not policy. It was regulation, I guess you would say, or cabinet direction.
Could you come back to us at the curriculum committee meeting this month to possibly give us an update on...
copy paper. I can tell you, like, for instance, I was at the high school today, yesterday, and they were using orange paper in a chemistry lab that, you know, we wouldn't supply, or it would be a special order. So, you know, I don't know if that... In 2009, when we made that initial request that students bring two reams of paper, it was simply to keep a stock of copy paper for the campus.
I understand the need. I understand teachers put out a lot of their own personal money, you know, to supply the classroom. I have no problem with that. I was just commenting that one of them was colored.
So, Dr. Murphy, if you would, could you come back to us and bring us an update on using Title I funds to purchase paper and possibly taking a little of, you know, maybe kids only have to bring one instead of two or
Or, you know, the year's already started, and so that a lot of that stuff has already come in, but we certainly could make a direction change for next year.
That would be totally appropriate if the board...
or not hold students in trouble if they're not bringing it this year.
We shouldn't be in trouble. I mean, we don't know their financial situation or whatever the reason, but I don't think it's something that should be enforced.
And I don't think we ever made kids in trouble if they didn't bring it. So we'll bring back a paper discussion at Letty's committee.
Mm-hmm. A student-friendly. Paper discussion.
I think it's administration.
Correct, but I'm hearing you want to rock here. Is that okay?
So, what would we like to do?
Well, we have to approve this purchase anyway, so my motion is to approve. I'll second.
Tony?
Can
yes.
I ask a question?
Okay, just one.
One of the concerns I have is just if we could look at looking at the budget, I guess how much teachers are asking, and then total that cost, and then see if we could put that.
At the curriculum committee meeting? Okay, Dr. Murphy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Parada?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes. That would take us to N.
Contract with Rio Grande Speech Therapy Group for Speech-Language Pathologist Services.
Okay, I asked that this one be pulled along with the other two because I was wondering why are we needing to contract with the company and also contract with two separate individuals?
Good evening. Hi. We're behind on speech therapy. We lost a speech therapist in January. Her husband was deployed, and so she left. And so from the period of January to the time they started, which was mid to late April, all of those services had gone underperformed. And so when the contractor came in, they had to provide current services. And so this summer I offered a summer camp, and some parents did bring their children in, but not all of them. We have thousands of minutes to make up. So just in talking with Cabinet and my superiors, I wanted to contract with this company. He's actually going to start, if you all agree to this, it'll take them a week to get the schedules ready. And so I would like them to perform current therapy and then use the contract people to come in and do the makeup therapy. I also have a very large population of students from Head Start that need to be placed in the school, and they're of age to come into our school and receive services. So there continues to be a huge backlog at two elementary campuses because they've done that and came to an elementary of students that have not received services. So I need to make sure that all of that from the last school year is made up as quickly as possible, and that's what I would use the people to do.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry.
Jenny, but how, many, how do you know how many are going to be provided by that agency? You don't know that. Or do you know how many are going to be provided? I mean, you want to contract to other people. How do you know how many people are going to be provided by the agency itself?
Well, I have asked for 4.5 individuals.
Well, why not the 6.5 instead of hiring two separate contracts? I mean, actually, you're having three separate contracts.
Well, why? Actually, what was becoming prohibitive was the cost. I pay the contractors, the district pays the contractors $55 an hour. And with this agency, we're going to be paid for fully certified SLP $70 an hour. For therapy, and I think I've got a contract here, $60 for paperwork, and a speech-language pathologist assistant, $60, and then I think it's $50 for paperwork. Yeah. So just in the best interest of trying to move forward, I'm still going to make every effort to hire. This is not an optimum situation for a district.
How true is it that these speech therapists are going to go work for that agency?
Well, that's part of the reason we're trying to contract with the two that we're trying to contract with now, so we can save money. Because what the trend is now, that all these professional services are going to these.
Well, and I understand that. I understand that we have no control over that, which is fine. But we were already behind, and we're going to contract this same agency. Well, not the same agency, but this agency where these individuals are going to go work.
It actually
and
is.
We're already behind with these individuals?
Well, basically, I've got written in the contract. Give me 2 seconds. Basically, my expectation of them is they will provide 12 to 13 sessions per day with 3 to 5 students.
And they are not there when you're employees?
They're not. They are not. Although,
the expectations were not there when you're employees?
The expectation was there, absolutely. But what you have to remember is the speech therapist has just been running behind and trying to catch up because we've been short-staffed. And so I do recognize the fact that several of them, not all of the speech therapists that left, went to work for this agency. They're already with the Region 19 buy board. But what I'm going to do to make sure that we optimize services from them is that they run groups of 3 to 5 students, and then I'm asked for an explanation if some kids require independent therapy sessions, an explanation in writing there to do 6.5 hours of therapy and 1 hour of documentation per day. So I'm making every effort to make sure that we maximize services until we can find people to come work for us.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
What is the cost that we're spending on the contracted services in total, the projected cost?
Mary Allison, I kind of put a pencil to it the other day, but if you calculated, just to kind of give it a general idea, it's about 4.5 people will cost about $504,000 if you use the $70 per hour rate.
So for 4.5 FTEs, rather, right?
Yes.
We're talking about $500,000.
Yes, sir.
And what are we paying the SLPs?
I would be part of this.
To try and come over and work for us on a full-time basis. And these... And you're talking 4.5 FTEs at 40 hours a week? Is that the one?
Yes.
Okay. And what are we paying the SLPs?
They are on the administrative pay scale. I don't have that in front of me. I can provide that information to you. However, I have checked with TASB, and the rates that we're paying are competitive and are the market rate. So we have looked at that. However, in talking to some of the SLPs as they transitioned into the private sector, one of them had mentioned that they have flexibility, and that was the big attraction to them, that they had flexibility in their work schedule, that they could work from home. And so they wanted that similar arrangement here. And of course, you know, being that we're funded with taxpayers' money and we have accountability that we owe the community, we could not provide that same flexibility. But in asking, I did ask about what they were making at the other place, and they said, well, for 40 hours, I'm going to get $75,000. And looking at the daily rate here, that would equal what they would get here if they would give us 40 hours of work. But the SLPs were coming in saying, well, we only want to work part-time. We only want to work 6 hours a day versus 8 hours a day. So their pay was adjusted accordingly to the number of hours that they were working. Therefore, it wasn't as attractive as this other place that they're going to get their full rate and they can work half of the time from home. And so I don't think that's something that we could work with. I did bring the topic up at the PAR 19 meeting with all the other school districts about the situation with the SLPs. They mentioned to me that at one point or another, they were all in the same boat. As a matter of fact, Isleta ISD told me, we're not doing any more sweetheart deals. This is what we pay for the position and the number of hours that they have to work. And they said they weren't negotiating any type of deals anymore. So our rates are competitive. The position is posted. We will go ahead and interview if people apply. The other districts have assured me that if they have any applicants or people interested, they were going to point them in our direction. So it apparently is something that happens, and it's happened at all the other districts. And I believe the HR people from Clint said, don't worry. She says they always come back. It's not greener on the other side. And they said eventually they trickled back. And so she said it's unfortunate that we're going through this situation. But what Janine has proposed is, you know, something that we will address and to address our immediate need. But certainly we're going to be looking at other companies and for now to get going with the start of school, this is the what she has proposed for us to do.
Okay, so we're spending, I guess, over $100,000 on each FTE because we don't want to increase our rate that we want to attract SLPs because we want to be.
Why?
I don't get it.
No, they want flexibility.
Yeah, why can't we provide that flexibility?
Because the kids want, need to switch their services.
Huh?
And the students need to have services.
Well, I know that, but why can't we hire six instead of four?
Well, that they want to pay the 40 hours.
No, pay them even though partly they're, what they're only going to get paid for whatever they work in the agency for whatever hours they work. As a business?
Dr. Murphy and I came before you last year with a stipend. Many districts, many of the larger districts offer 10, 12, somewhere in that area stipends in addition to their salary. And I know that the base is competitive, but I'm not quite sure with the stipend. And one of the other things is pay a stipend and on top of what would their average salary be, $68,000, $70,000?
If they were to work full time, they're looking at $75,000. So, like I said, that base salary is competitive, according to TASB and the study that they just did. All of the stipends for administrative staff have been rolled into their base salary. So we're not currently paying stipends to administrative staff in addition to their. To their base pay.
And the only thing I would ask is that these are federally mandated services, and so I think it puts the district definitely at risk of litigation as we fall further behind. I think if I can get one of the people at the $55 an hour, I just need to get people in to get services made up and to get things going. Diagnosticians are going to have to assume some of the ARD responsibilities. This company is going to have some people do ARDs, so it's going to be a process of getting loads together and then getting in and getting the job done. This creates a lot of work that I don't want to be. I mean, it's created a burden in many different ways. I'm open to any suggestions that you have for solving the problem. I feel as though I've been fighting the battle to retain related services staff since for the last 6 years.
The issue as I see it is these SLPs that come work for us don't want to work 40 hours a week.
That's right.
Okay. So the private companies are accommodating them. Why can't we?
Sir, I can't allow anybody to work from home. I feel like you're working for...
We can.
No, not to work from home.
Well, that's what they want.
No, but that's not the flexibility I'm talking about. I thought the flexibility was the number of hours they wanted to work.
No, they
have the flexibility. Like I said, we had one working part-time. We had one working 6 hours a day. So we accommodated, and I think Dr. Murphy met with them last year and was accommodating their schedule. But, of course, the number of hours that they wanted to work, their pay was equal to those number of hours.
Right.
The flexibility that they have in the private sector is that they can do work from home. And like I said, with us, I think that in this new contract that Janine has brought forth with this company that we want to kick off the year with, in the past, and I had this discussion with Janine, you know, here we were contracting with a vendor, and of course, that vendor needs to be monitored. They need, you know, there needs to be sure that the service that they're providing us for X number of dollars, it gets done. And this is what now Janine has outlined in the contract specifically, that they were going to do X number of students and X number of paperwork, and all of that is outlined now, which in the past it wasn't. So this, I think we've gotten a little bit more stringent with the contract, and of course, I've talked to Janine about the proper oversight over the vendor and the services that they're providing to make sure that if we're paying them premium dollars, that work gets done.
And they're aware, and Ron and I sat down and met with them, that at any time this contract within 10 days is over. That being said, the flexibility that they seek in working for this private agency, they would be able to exercise that working this contract in our district, because they are obligated to 6.5 hours a day of direct therapy, a 30-minute unpaid lunch, and an hour of documentation time to prepare for ARDS and do SHARS documentation. So whatever flexibility they thought, in my opinion, that they are going to get at this company will not be available to them in this district under my supervision. I promise.
Sammy and I met with the owner last week, and we told her we're going to hold your feet to the fire. We need people here. If this person's not performing properly the way that she wants, we'll get somebody else here. She assured us that they've had enough people that they can handle what our needs are, and that one of them wants to perform to get another.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is my question, Mr. Jenny. If they have enough people, we can't get all people from there? Since you say you're in great need, not you, but the district. Instead of having so many contracts out there.
Why do you have the Rio Grande and then the two individuals?
Those were two returning contractors. We looked at the costs. We looked at the immediacy of the need of the services. When these speech therapists left, they did leave work undone. They did not, we've got ARDS that have to be held.
We're behind.
Summer school. Yeah. I've got documentation from the company. I did send a letter to the parents and offer therapy services in the summer. So what I want the company to do is focus on current services and deliver what's currently written in the IEP and have these other contractors as quickly as possible complete the makeup services. One of the contractors does not live in town. She has agreed to occasionally come in and work no more than 40 hours a month. One contractor works in Socorro and is able to offer us 2 days after Labor Day and possibly three. This is just an effort to have pay people $55 an hour as opposed to the 60 and 70.
So the two separate line items that have the individuals are cheaper.
That's correct.
Yes, sir.
And they have shown some loyalty to our district by wanting to stay with us rather than going with this other company.
So that helps the overall scheme because we can at least get a couple that are cheaper and then the higher.
But you're still putting the district hostage, like we're doing it on their terms. And it's what we need, what our kids need. And I mean, I understand the pricing and whatnot, but if we're already going to contract with the company, I don't see how it's fit to contract these other people on a need basis. I mean, I understand you're saying that we're behind. I'm looking on page 146 here. We had 4 full-time people that have resigned, so basically they didn't do their job. Is that what happened?
They have not been able to catch up from the constant turnover of speech therapists and loss of staff. One of the speech therapists was 75%. We've just never been fully staffed. And I don't want to deal with contracted services. I'll be honest with you, I have no loyalty to these people other than the fact that those two individuals have helped us out. I just want to make services up and move forward. What I'd really rather do is hire
individuals.
You know, I think where we need to go with the other company, and the only other thing I can tell you is the two individuals that are returning on the limited contract, and it's only for as long as we need them. They're familiar with the paperwork, procedures, and schools. And so that is a benefit. And any other questions?
I have maybe an observation is what I'm hearing from you. You're backed up against the wall. You need services. Our students need services. And this is the best possible arrangement at the time that we can come to.
Yes, ma'am. I received at least 2 calls a day regarding provision of services. Yeah.
And every day in a child's life is exceedingly important. I know. Yes, sir.
Have we been receiving applicants for the posted positions?
There are a couple in there.
We have some applicants that are SLPAs and clinical fellowship year interns, but the problem is if I don't have a fully certified SLP to provide the supervision and sign up on the CHARS, I should not pursue that.
And we will have the posting up. And we will try and recruit and waiting to see, you know, what other help the other districts, you know, as far as personnel that they're going to send. But, you know,
I don't understand where these other districts were sending these
applicants.
Applicants.
If they have,
they're going to refer them to us. Most of the districts right now, like I said, they told us, don't worry, we've been there, done that. You know, they come back, and fortunately, they all said they were fully staffed, and they said, we've got people in our pools that will go ahead and point them in your direction and see if they apply for your positions.
And I'm waiting.
All right, and how are we in relation to our 2 closest districts in terms of the pay?
I can send you that information in the Friday packet, but my understanding is that we're very competitive.
Well, I'd like to see the numbers.
I'll send you the numbers.
The problem I have is that we've gone through this for the last 3 or 4 years with this problem, and I frankly don't want to go through this problem again. And very competitive to me in this particular type of situation that we've had to, you know, toil through for the last 4 years with possible problems from the federal government is not satisfactory to me. As a board member, it just is not. And if we have to increase the pay and the board has to take a look at that so that we can get full-time people or even, I could correctly get 7 part-timers instead of, but that they be our employees. In terms of flexibility given on that particular day, I don't mind that. If that's going to cut us from having to have, you know, services from 3 different providers out there.
I would be grateful if you could help me find a solution.
Well, I think
what I'm hearing is we need to have this at a committee meeting and we need to review the salaries and the stipends And also what I'm hearing is, Dr. Murphy, this needs to be a career pathway for our kids.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, we need to, like, grow up our own.
Yes, ma'am.
And I echo what Sergio is saying, career tech.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We've had this problem since the day I walked in the door, SLPs, and we'd be happy to bring it back to committee. We as Janine said, we brought this to you guys a couple times. We went with the reduced
this was Sakura, hours. They were paying.
We've tried some creative things. We just haven't been able to retain them.
I'll prepare something for the instruction committee on September the 11th, and we can talk about it.
Happy.
I just think we're doing bad day jobs here instead of trying to do a solution, comprehensive solution to this problem that's, you know, we've been here for 4 or 5 years, actually longer than that.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
Ron, if the board approves this tonight, but we come up with a better solution, and then in October, because we get a better solution, we get a good applicant pool, and we can hire. And we cut all these contracts off.
This contract will be closed in 10 days, written notice.
Okay.
No.
And they know it.
We made it very aware.
So we could come up with a solution and then cancel.
Okay.
That's fine, but are we posting now? They're going to know what the salary is until we discuss that. We shouldn't.
Well, but
it
can be
posted. Well, we could repost
the posting
it.
Is up, yes. It can be prorated.
Mm-hmm. Why not for it? You know,
we've got to start somewhere.
The posting is up based on our current pay scale.
See, that's not going to help us. Hasn't helped us in the last 4 years, has it, guys?
It's a market.
I think that once we hear what we have and what we are at the committee meeting, we can then come back at a real meeting and possibly work with the numbers to secure that we're not going to go through this.
Do we have any of your type of SLPs in the pool, the fully licensed?
I believe there's two.
And there are, I think there's just one.
Well, they won't pull out those. I need to look at that.
I'd like to see that information. Maybe we can do it as soon as possible.
See, that's the other thing, she should bring up the point. There might be applicants in the pool that we just don't want, even if they are certified. So we
yeah, and that would be,
there,
for
too.
Example, people that left here after receiving poor evaluations for me and going to other districts for more money, but really wanting to come back, because this really is a nice place to work, but I just have to be able to get them here and keep them
no,
here.
But it's the same thing in this contract. These people are going to be hired by these agencies, the same thing.
We can't control that. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but if we don't like a certain person, we don't have to.
That's right. If we want
if
to
I see somebody not performing,
day,
they're out. They had worked with us previously, and I have some questions regarding the student. I said, this is an issue, you take care of it, and then they don't.
That's one of the benefits of contracting out with a company like this. If we don't like that person, they're not performing to our expectations, we tell them to bring somebody else and get them here more.
And then as we hire people, even maybe this one person, that reduces the need for the contract.
Absolutely.
Well, wouldn't it make more sense to just contract it all through the company instead of hiring these other two on the side? I mean, since we do have a binding contract and it's on our terms, to me, it makes more sense to go all through the company instead of having these separate, like, other contracts off to the side. I mean, even for scheduling purposes.
It's like Martha mentioned, we're enabling these people to go to these companies and get more money. That's why we're trying to hold on to them on our own contracts so that they don't go to these companies. Because next year, they're going to come back, they're going to get all the SLPs, and they're going to come back and go, okay, now our rate's $100 now.
Yeah,
you know, and then they're going to start getting what they want. We're seeing this all over the country. We actually go out for bid probably 2 to 3 times a year for these, and we're getting the same kind of company. We don't get individuals that respond to our RFQs. It's companies like Ribbon and people like that that actually, I call them headhunters, because what they do is they go out and bid, and we award the bid to them, and then we tell them we need an SLP, and then, okay, well, let me see if we can find one for you. You know, that's not helping us any. Mm-hmm. So I think once enough of these people move into these groups, then all of a sudden the company doesn't have enough business to go around for all of them. Then they're all going to start wising up and thinking, you know what, maybe I better, you know, go to work for one of these school districts and have a better understanding.
Well, you hope.
And more permanent job. Yeah, that's all we can do is hope. But you know, it's like a give and take, you know.
And I think now I've fully answered your question. So we need 4.5, and as the district grows, probably more. So that being said, this other person, I just wanted to get in and make it for minutes. That's all I wanted to do. It's in San Jose Danian and KU2 Elementary. And like I said, it's thousands of minutes. I've got the documentation here. And but I think if she focuses on that, and this agency focuses on present IEP and moving forward, and then we have somebody separately just going in to do the makeup, it doesn't become a paperwork nightmare, and we just clear everything up. I just want to get the makeup done.
Understand.
And for me, I think it would be simpler for somebody that's going to pay a lot less, knows the district, and will get in and is able to compact and compress the loads of the groups.
Any further discussion? No. Okay. Do I have a motion for Ann?
So moved.
And a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Motion made and seconded. One letter, Ann. Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes. That would take us to O. Any discussion? Tony?
No.
Oh, you want to tell something?
It was all the same. So oh. I'll just go ahead and we already discussed it.
Okay.
Motion to approve. Second.
Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr.
Carvalho? Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes. Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs.
Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes. And that would be next to P.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
I was seeing if we could actually move up. I know we have some people waiting.
Wait, we got to do this.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We got
to... motion to approve P.
I'll second that. Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes. And Mr. Rodriguez, what would you like?
9B.
9B. You would like to move that forward?
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have any objections to moving 9B forward? Hearing none, 9B just turned into the next item.
Discussion, review, and possible action regarding master contract for delinquent tax collection services and CISD's continued participation in the agreement, fees charged, and for the work performed and the relationship amongst the various participants in the agreement.
Thank you, Tony. Mr. Blanco?
I'm sure I'll handle this, President, and the board document. At the last committee meeting, you created that list of items of information that you wanted to consider asking with respect to the tax collection services contract. We covered a lot of my presentation in your answers. I just need direction from the administration and from the board as to whether you want us to send a further written request to the city's tax collection office to answer the questions that were not covered tonight. Those would be the error in the tax collection effort, although I believe from Mr. Delgado's report, my ability to get that from the city's audit report, so we'll certainly check that. Options for KU2 going forward, that's going to require a review of the contract, and whether or not it can be bid out individually, or whether you continue to participate in that. And then the other items, I believe, were answered tonight, that were asked, so I don't know if you want us to prepare a follow-up written request to the city's tax collection office, or if you just want us to deal with those two issues.
I would first, I also had him, when I went to go talk to him right now, email Tony so that way we could get printed the response we got from tax firm. I would say prepare all those questions. Those are the individual we have the contract with is with the city of El Paso. And so I would request that we put all those questions on there. And then the other thing, just reading this, the last paragraph of this, The Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct provides for certain written disclosures and advance client consent. That paragraph, I want to, I guess, the interpretation of, see if we could get a different interpretation than the firm that's actually providing the...
With respect to Mr. McCormick's opinion letter?
Correct.
Okay.
And so the other question that I want to add, instead of just, since it is, you know, I guess the question, what was the question that you wrote down from the committee meeting when it comes to the split fee sharing?
Well, the question from the committee meeting was whether or not there are other lawyers and other law firms that were receiving fees for work on the tax collection contract. They answered that no tonight.
From these individuals. And according to the opinion presented.
Yes, it's all one firm, there's no fee splitting. So
okay. And so I guess my interpretation is whether, if this opinion is correct, I guess a different type of question that refers to when we send it to the city and to either council, how is it that it actually, I guess, since right here it says the rules do not apply when legal fees are generated, pretty much it's a different scenario, but legally correct. How is it that we can get that information, or the city?
I'm not sure you can. The firm is not willing to provide it. If you're asking.
Well, I would like the city, and maybe if it does go to council, have an agenda item to discuss that and see.
We can ask them to include that.
Yeah.
Do you have any other comments or questions?
Do you need a motion?
We do need a motion to direct us to actually make that request. It will be the list that was prepared at the last meeting with the additional requests, as I understand it, from tonight to have a review of Mr. McCormick's opinion.
Correct. And I so move.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. A motion made and seconded. And Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Cuadrado?
Yes.
Mrs. González?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes. That would then take us to back to 7.
Item 7 is executive session, and the time is now 8:14 p.m. And the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code, Section 5.074, to hear a recommendation for assistant principal of Aldebaran Middle School.
Thank you, Tony.